This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Tuesday. Feels like a Friday already. So much going on. This hour, Gerard Baker is here, editor-at-large of the Wall Street Journal and host of the Wall Street Journal at-large on Fridays at 7:30. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is going to bring us up close and personal in Texas. He's the Dallas County Republican Party chair, as well as an esteemed officer in the military, now retired. We have a few things going on today. The President of the United States will meet with the head of the Philippines, maybe to announce a trade deal, which would be kind of cool, to go with Indonesia and Vietnam. And the President hopefully will get an EU done this week. We're going to talk to Jerry about that. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
On Friday, Donald Trump posted, "I absolutely love that Colbert got fired. How dare you, sir? Would an untalented man be able to compose the following satirical witticism? Go f*** yourself."
And the crowd loves it. The Late Show loser. Yep, Stephen Colbert gets a lot of support and a lot of expletives, but this is all about money. His show is losing a ton of it.
Number two.
Secretary said it, Rodney said it. Sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals. Hard stop. New York City, how many times do you want to see NYPD attacked by illegal alien criminals in the city?
Sanctuary standoff. More criminals are running wild in another illegal immigrant sanctuary metropolis, New York City. And we just saw a Border Patrol agent almost lose his life. What the Trump team has vowed to do.
Number one.
And I'll tell you what, I know exactly what happened in that debate. He flew around the world, basically, the mileage that he could have flown around the world three times.
Yeah.
He's 81 years old. He's tired as you give him Ambien to be able to sleep. He gets up on the stage, and he looks like he's a deer in the headlights.
Really, Hunter Biden, he just lets it rip. Hunter uses a howitzer verbally to blow away his party on behalf of his father, and he's managed to do the impossible, embarrass himself further, and sully his dad with by saying he was on Ambien during the debate as the party remains helplessly divided and unpopular. Gerard Baker, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian. Pleasure to be here.
First off, on the revelation on Ambien, that's a new one, isn't it? I mean, is he trying to bail his dad out? And if that was true, wouldn't he have been better off saying it at the time?
Yeah, look, of course he's trying to bail his dad out. I mean, you know, his dad was his only thing, really, that stopped him, obviously, from spending a lot of time in jail. So he has a lot of debt there, but he also clearly has a lot of anger there. Look, the Biden family have not come to terms with what they really, the damage that they did. And now, in typical terms, they want to blame everybody else. And, you know, Hunter Biden wants to blame his fellow Democrats for everything that went wrong. Well, you know, that's a kind of circular firing squad for the Democrats, really, but you know the Bidens are responsible for everything that happened to them. Hunter played, you know, an extraordinarily and frankly sickeningly large role in you know, in the nation's life over the last few years, and the role that he had with his father. And you know, it would be better for everybody if he would just go away.
You know, what's so interesting is that you know, there's different theories of, did his family know he was doing this? Would you pick someone instead of the Wall Street Journal or somebody of prestige? Wouldn't you pick a podcaster with a little bit of credibility? Nothing against Andrew Callahan, but I never heard of him. Looked him up in the background. I guess he's got a few followers.
Brian,
looks like a ragged backyard party.
Brian, the words credibility and Hunter Biden do not belong in the same sentence.
So then why did he do it? Do you think he represents his family?
Of course.
Do you think they told him to go do that?
Listen, we know, Brian. We've seen little hints of this. We've seen little flashes from Biden himself. We've seen all the books that have now, you know, very belatedly come out and told us how incompetent and senile Biden was have also told us, you know, the couple of the books that came out in the last few months about the 2024 election have told us, you know, how angry Biden was with Nancy Pelosi, angry with Barack Obama, angry with the party that forced him out. They are sitting there seething. They think they, you know, that they refuse to come to terms with reality. They refuse. They continue to deny what everybody else could see, that the man was not capable, that he was, and thanks to his, you know, and his son was doing other stuff even way worse than being incapable.
We don't know if that's his cocaine.
And they are just, they're all just angry, and you know, and they're sitting, and then instead of demonstrating some sort of dignity, you know, in retirement and defeat, and let's be fair again, Biden is sick, right? He's probably very, very sick. You know, come to terms with it and show some dignity, show some patriotism, and stop, you know, kind of blaming everybody else for your own flaws.
Let me just add to this. Mark Penn just posted this, longtime Clinton pollster, now running the Harris. A lot of those Harris polls are him. Says, my stomach churns as seeing a foul-mouthed Hunter Biden attack the world. He's out of jail only because his dad pardoned him after he carried out a $20 million shakedown of shady foreign interests with the consent and participation of Joe Biden, and he paid no taxes on it. This was followed by fake painting sales. His laptop was 100% real, and what it revealed was horrific on all counts, from living with his dead brother's wife to fueling endless cocaine binges to abusing the trust of his dad's office. No one should pay him an iota of attention. Wow.
Yeah, look, the only other thing I say, Brian, is that this is a gift, obviously, for Donald Trump and the Republicans. You know, the Democrats must be absolutely seething about this. The last thing they need right now, given the disarray that they're already in and the fact that you've got people like AOC and Zoran Mamdani as kind of leading figures in the party, the lack of credibility the party now has, you know, they want to keep the focus on the issues. You know, they want to keep the focus on Donald Trump, on the legislation that's just gone through, the One Big Beautiful Bill, and all of those things. They want to sort of, and along comes, you know, Hunter Biden to remind us what an absolute disaster all that was, and frankly how, again, whatever doubts people may have about Donald Trump, and they may be reasonable and real doubts, you know, this reminds them of why Donald Trump was elected and just what a disaster the Biden was and what a mess the Democratic Party continues to be.
No doubt about it. And the thing is, too, is it's all a distraction. I think one of the biggest stories that is so beyond New York is Zoran Mamdani, because what he ran on, and sometimes, as you know, Gerard, sometimes people say things and go, yeah, that was 5 years ago. I don't feel that way anymore. You know, that was 2 years ago. I was taken out of context. Instead, he's like, don't like capitalism, don't like billionaires, don't really defund the police. You know, domestic disputes should be actually handled by social workers, and it should be a jaywalking ticket. I mean, so what their answer is to take the socialist who has a replica in running for the mayor's race in Minneapolis, and he's got another surrogate running for the open Senate seat in Michigan.
Correct.
This is getting traction.
Absolutely.
And it's almost as if we forgot the... We've heard socialism has been tried. Marxism has been tried. Communism has been tried. And there's people that will accept him as a citizen. Why would you come here with those beliefs and want to lead a city that's a financial capital of the world if you don't like capitalism?
That's where the energy is in the Democratic Party right now. The Democratic Party is, as I said, is in a significant amount of disarray. They lost, you know, all the they lost everything last November. They're struggling to find a new direction. And as quite often happens in these circumstances, the people who have the most extreme message, the ones who most animate the base, the ones who have, by the way, a very simple, glib story, and that's what Marxism has always been. Marxism has always been a story about evil capitalists exploiting people. By the way, in places like New York City, or as you said, in Minneapolis, or in parts of Michigan, and indeed many other cities in the country, there are large numbers of people for whom, you know, the American dream seems to be out of reach, right? And by the way, these are often university graduates who've had their minds filled with left-wing propaganda in college. They come out, they've got a huge amount of student debt, and they can't get jobs that will enable them to pay and to live in these expensive cities like New York City or San Francisco or other places. And I think that message, that this is not their problem, it's not the problem of these terribly run cities, it's the problem of capitalism, that message resonates with a lot of those people, and they are, as I say, where the energy is in the Democratic Party.
You know, it's just discouraging to think another generation won't understand how great this country is and what capitalism means, the whole the need for grit and determination and have an opportunity to be successful, but no guarantees. So the president just posted this. The Wall Street Journal ran a typically untruthful story saying that Secretary of Treasury Scott Bessent explained explained to me that firing Jerome Tulate Powell, the worst Federal Reserve chairman in history, would be bad for the market. Nobody had to explain that to me. I know better than anybody what's good for the market. And he goes on. You guys are a bit of a war, you and the Wall Street Journal and the White House.
Well, I'm nothing. It's nothing to do with me. I work for the editorial page of the Journal, and I know he's in a fight with the editor and with the proprietor. But as far as the story's concerned, the Jay Powell. We all know that there's pressure on Jay Powell. If Donald Trump really does understand that it would be disastrous to fire Jay Powell in terms of what it would mean for monetary policy and inflation, then it would be better if he stopped suggesting that he's going to fire him, because he does keep saying that. Last week, there were.
He's trying to harangue him into lowering rates.
Which is precisely counterproductive, right? If the markets think. As Donald Trump says, that statement says, if the markets think that the Federal Reserve is essentially completely under the control of the president of the United States, whoever that president is, may have be Donald Trump in 4 years' time, it may be somebody else. It will be somebody else in 4 years' time. Then they will not believe that monetary policy is being set in the interests of the economy and controlling inflation and all the other things that the Fed, the dual mandate actually that it has. They'll think that the Federal Reserve is being run in the interest of getting whoever is the president of the United States reelected. That is not a recipe for sound monetary policy, and it's not a recipe for a sound economy.
Gerard, do you think, just with your economic knowledge, are you surprised the rates aren't lower?
No, I'm not really, because I think the Fed is still in a wait and see mode. I think what I look at, Brian, are long term interest rates, which are bond yields, which is what the market sets. In some ways, it's more useful to look at that than actually what the Fed is doing. They remain relatively high. The 10-year yield has been up and down a little bit, but it remains high. That suggests to me that markets are concerned about two things: one, about the continuing risk of inflation and whether or not we see any impact from the tariffs, whether that feeds through into prices. And two, they're worried about the state of the budget, which, of course, as we also know, when you run a huge budget deficit, that can be inflationary. So look at those. Those rates are not set by the Federal Reserve. They are set by the markets, and the markets are continue to be worried. And I think it's therefore reasonable that the Federal Reserve continues to wait and see whether or not these inflationary concerns that they have do actually feed through into higher prices.
So we have three deals. We have the UK, we have Indonesia, and we have Vietnam. It looks like we could get Philippines today. But here's what Scott Bessent said as we get closer to the August 1st deadline. Cut 21.
Imagine that, steel and AI. And it's a very diversified building boom. We're seeing companies from all over the world want to come in. You mentioned the AstraZeneca, and I can tell you we're about to announce a rash of trade deals in the coming days, and a lot of these trade deals are going to include substantial investments in the U.S., whether it's autos, semiconductors, and pharmaceuticals.
Your reaction?
I look forward to seeing it. We always need to be careful. United States has been the most dynamic economy in the world for a long time, continues to be. You just talked about how important capitalism is and how successful capitalism is. Companies have been coming here. They have been investing in this country and they will continue to invest in this country because it remains the most dynamic economy in the world. We need to be careful and it may well be that as part of these trade deals, companies are going to make more commitments to do that. But we need to be careful about two things. One, about plans that are already in place, and they're simply going to dress this up as part of a trade deal. And two, promises.
Can you back that up? What do you mean by this? Again,
I don't know. So we're going to have a trade deal. You mentioned we may have a trade deal with the Philippines. We may have a trade deal with some other countries. And it sounds as though, from what Bessent's saying, as though part of that is going to be announcements that those foreign companies are going to invest in the United States. Well, those foreign companies, inward investment in the United States is a massive thing. You know why inward investment in the United States is so large, Brian? Because the United States has trade deficits with many countries, which means that those countries have huge amounts of dollars. What do they do with those dollars? They invest it back in the United States. This is one of the kind of flawed reasoning about the idea that trade deficits are so terrible. Those countries like China, what does China do with its deficit? With its surplus with the United States, it buys treasury bonds
to a large part. They not doing it?
They're still the second largest holder of treasury bonds, or the Japanese, the largest holder of treasury bonds. So the money is there because the United States has been trading with these these countries and supplying those countries with dollars in exchange for goods. Those countries then have those dollars and they invest it somewhere, and a lot of it comes back into the United States. This is why their foreign direct investment into the United States is so high.
But would you also say with the focus, the laser focus of the president and his, whoever the Treasury Secretary is, to bring back that investment, it is really yielding more results maybe than past presidents?
I think it's too early to say. I mean, we'll see. I, there's been significant investment in this country. There continues to be. I think there, you know, the jury is out on whether or not these tariff threats and these tariff measures really have that impact. As I say, on the one hand, yes. Encouraging American companies to build in the United States is surely a good thing. Whether or not this is actually forcing foreign countries and their companies to invest in the United States, I'm open-minded, but we haven't seen it yet.
All right, we're going to take a short time out and come back with Gerard Baker. A couple more minutes. He's editor-at-large of the Wall Street Journal. So much going on. And could we have a trade deal? Maybe before this show is through, could it be with the Philippines? Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. Between two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN, you try to be in control of how your info is protected. But many other places also have it, and they might not be as careful. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for 40% off. Terms apply.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
So the President of the United States is going to be with the Philippines right now. I'm with the Philippines president today. I don't think you come in close to a trade deal. I have the president here and not do it. Scott Bessent's coming out and saying I could have a bunch of trade deals done, I think is maybe I'm optimistic that an EU could be next. Here's what he did say, though, about what's going to happen if they can't get a deal. Cut 22.
I think August 1st is a pretty hard deadline, but, you know, what will happen? For all countries, because what I think will happen is that the tariff level will boomerang back to the reciprocal level from April 2nd. That doesn't mean we can't negotiate when the countries are at the higher level.
But I think everybody would like to avoid that. I think the Germans leaning on that because of that. That would be interesting. And I think Scott Bessent has got the respect to hopefully that Lutnick and others just back off and let him go. Jameson, Greer, whatever. Somebody's got to take the lead. But I sense that Bessent has the president's ear so he could come in and get this thing done, the framework. What I think the president's doing is like typical. I mean, fundamental sales. You try to get the best deals, show you're willing to walk away, and you go right up to that deadline. You tell everyone that deadline is real and then say, okay, that's the best possible deal I got. I have it. And then with the people that don't get deals, you get more tariff revenue. The people that do get deals, fundamentally, we have a more level playing field when it comes to trade. This is what's going to help Trump in the long run. What I find unbelievable is the Wall Street Journal, for example, all over the place. On Friday, we talk about the fundamentals being fine and it's ready to launch. The economy's ready to launch. Today, I see this story that there's some indications that, you know, recessions isn't out of the question. I'm thinking to myself, well, what do you think? These are supposedly the biggest experts in the world. So if I'm Trump, I just don't even worry about it. I just do the things I'm going to do. Now you have for the next two years, this whole economics program, the big, beautiful law now, is going to be your jet fuel. And then you try to get the best trade deals as possible while putting out rescission packages when you can. And they're going to put a lot of money into defense. I think that's very heartening. I think if we could get some type of resolve in Ukraine, that money shuts down. And then we have a situation where Israel just defends instead of having to use weapons for offense, while everybody else buys weapons from us to get up to their 5%. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show when we come back. The latest on what we learned from Bret Baier's interview with the foreign minister of Iran yesterday. Pretty fascinating. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West on that as California loses another big business, but this time to Tennessee.
It's Will Tain Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern Monday through Thursday at FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The reason these two assailants are inside the United States today is because of failed border policies by the Biden administration. I personally warned the Biden administration against their open border policies in 2021. I was ignored, and exactly what I predicted, many of us predicted, happened, total chaos along the border. These two individuals, the two assailants, were released into the United States after being apprehended because of failed policies. President Trump stepped up and fixed those failed policies on January 20th of this year. With the support from Secretary Noem, we now have one of the most secure, we have the most secure border that I've ever seen in my entire lifetime.
And we might never see a border like this again, especially if Trump leaves office in 3.5 years. But it's totally shut down. Literally nobody got in last week. And the president of the United States pointed that on Truth Social. But I'd love to see him down there on the border, just pointing out how different it is. And now they could go chase people here rather than worry about who's bleeding in, who's combining, who's profiting. Right away, the cartel's got to do something else. Maybe they want to get into some philanthropy with all their money, with their inability to invest. Let's bring in Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, your thoughts about what Rodney Scott was saying, that there was a warning to the Biden administration about your border policy, but the border's our vice president wasn't listening.
Well, yeah, and good to be with you, Brian. There were plenty of warnings. As a matter of fact, Joe Biden could have seen it himself if he ever really took the time to go down and visit the border and walk the border, just the same as with his border czar and Vice President Kamala Harris. But this was purposeful. It was an intentional. This was part of their ideological agenda, was to open up the borders and flood the zone, as we like to say in some sports analogies, with illegal immigrants. But we got criminal illegal immigrants. We got terrorists. We got all of these folks that, in the result, you have people in the subway in New York City, a woman being set on fire. You have an off-duty CBP officer being shot in the face. And so you're right in that now we don't have to focus so many resources on the border itself. We have gotten that back under control, but we have to turn those resources internally. But guess what's happening now? Now we have the domestic terrorism of Antifa and other groups that are well-funded, well-armed, who conducted an ambush against a detention facility, 3 weeks ago, right here in Texas. So we still have problems. We still have concerns.
So Tom Homan weighed in on what Rodney Scott said in the press conference yesterday, prompted by the shooting of a federal agent who was just hanging out in a park, and these two moped-riding illegal immigrants rode up on him. It looks like right after robbing a woman of her wallet, and decided to rob this guy. He had a gun on him, shoots one of them. So you see this footage. And then you see the footage of the scooter guy with his wounded partner, illegal immigrant partner, dropping him off at a hospital. It's absolutely insane. Here's Tom Homan, cut 12.
Secretary said it, Rodney said it. Sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals. Hard stop. I've been doing this since 1984. I've never seen a situation where I see it today. New York City, how many times do you want to see NYPD attacked by illegal alien criminals in this city? Now a federal officer. How many citizens of this city have been attacked by illegal aliens in this city? You see the polls. Everybody agrees we should be arresting public safety threat illegal aliens, but you got a city council here that locked us out of Rikers Island. Are you kidding me? So an illegal alien in Rikers Island we can't talk to, we don't have access to. That makes the city unsafe. Every sanctuary city is unsafe. I'll say it again. Sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals.
So what's it going to take for people to sober up? You've got sanctuary cities in Texas, one over in Austin.
Yeah, we absolutely do. And that is something that is, number one, it's unconstitutional. Number two, it's unlawful. How can any elected official stand up and say, we are going to provide sanctuary to people that, number one, coming across the border into the country, as Tom Homan has articulated, that's a felony offense. Then on top of that, you're committing crimes. Those two individuals that shot the off-duty CBP officer, they have been arrested and released countless amounts of times.
Yeah, do you want to hear this rap sheet? Christian Abararo, who got shot. In 2023, a judge ordered final order of removal. May of 23, arrested for second-degree reckless endangerment. Obviously, he stayed. 24, arrested for fourth-degree felony, grand larceny, and petty larceny. Then he was arrested for fourth-degree felony and grand larceny again. And then February 25, arrested for second-degree reckless endangerment over in February, reckless driving, and for driving without a license. And then June pled guilty to petty larceny in the Bronx. Gets to stay. The other guy, illegal entered the country in 23 in Arizona. Felony grand larceny, second and third degree assault in October 24, criminal contempt in 24, armed robbery and firearm in Massachusetts in February. But, you know, Massachusetts worse than New York. So just let these guys go. They go in front of the judge and they go, yeah, armed robbery, you can go now.
And think about this now, the whole sanctuary city and sanctuary state concept. If you, Brian Kilmeade, had either one of these individuals living in your home, guess what? You're an accessory to their crimes. You're an accomplice to their crimes. You're complicit in their crimes. So what's the difference when you have elected officials saying that we're going to harbor criminals? And so that's why I think we're going to get to the point where if people are saying, such as Brandon Johnson in Chicago or the mayor in Boston, that we're not going to cooperate, we're not going to allow ICE, we're going to declare ourselves a sanctuary city or a sanctuary state, then they have to be held accountable because they are harboring criminals.
So I got to bring you to Hunter Biden's situation. This is absolutely insane.
Do we have to?
So this crackhead who's gotten a pardon from his dad is ranting against mostly Democrats from George Clooney on down to Nancy Pelosi to the David Axelrod and James Carville, blaming them for the state of affairs with his family on a nondescript podcast that I could tell this guy, Andrew Callahan. Here's him talking about George Clooney. Cut one.
I don't have to be nice. Number one, I agree with Quentin Tarantino. George Clooney is not a actor. He is a I don't know what he is. What do you have to do with anything? Why do I have to listen to you? What right do you have to step on a man who's given 52 years of his life to the service of this country and decide that you, George Clooney, are going to take out basically a full page ad in the New York Times to undermine the president at a time in which, by the way, what do people care about the most? Why do you think that the Republicans have an advantage over us? Because they're unified. They will go along with anything. I wasn't asking anybody to go along with anything. I was asking people to go along with this. The most successful administration in my lifetime.
I don't know what administration he's talking about, but he's mad at George Clooney for noticing that his dad is out of it.
Well, first and foremost, what an annoying voice. Second thing, he must still be doing crack.
Sounds like it, right?
Yeah, most successful, you know, administration around. And look, the whole thing, Democrats were unified. They were unified behind the unconstitutional actions of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. But then when they saw that he was a liability, when they saw that he was not able to be the front runner, that's when they cashiered him. And so, again, why would we take the word? Why is, you know, is Hunter Biden given a platform anyhow and whatsoever? Because he is relevant to what is going on in this country right now. But he is an indicator of what happens when people feel that they are above the law, that they are above scrutiny, they're above being held accountable or responsible for their actions. So the Biden family is done just the same as the Clinton family's done, the Bush family's done. All of these dynasties are pretty much so done.
But what about his debate performance? Listen to this. This is the first time I'm hearing this. Cut four.
And I'll tell you what, I know exactly what happened in that debate. He flew around the world, basically, and the mileage that he could have flown around the world three times.
Yeah.
He's 81 years old. He's tired as s***. They give him Ambien to be able to sleep. He gets up on the stage, and he looks like he's a deer in the headlights.
They gave him Ambien, excuse me? He had six prescription drugs. That wasn't listed on one of them. That embarrassment of a doctor that he has who took the fifth when asked pertinent questions about the president. Now, all of a sudden, he gets Ambien?
Yeah, again, you know, there's the maximum effective range of an excuse is 0 meters. We learned that in the military. And so his performance was pathetic because he was pathetic. He was not there. He did not understand the issues. He could not articulate any coherent responses. And the whole world saw that. You can try to blame it on Ambien or whatever. He was not ready. He was not in a primetime condition. And so that's it. So Hunter Biden, go away. You know, go get a new laptop, go back and hang out and do what you were doing previously because the American people don't want to hear from you.
Colonel Lastly, the foreign minister of Iran, spoke to Brett Baer yesterday, and he basically describes the achievements they've had with nuclear energy as something. It's a blessing. They've worked too hard to do it. They're not going to give up on it. They said that they might have indirect talks with us if we're good, essentially. I want you to listen to some of this exchange cut. And by the way, another important part of the exchange is, are you trying to assassinate the president? I don't know if we really got an answer to that. But here's a little of the foreign minister of Iran. He is kind of admitting one thing we know is clear that I know the press is not going to write about. They did really obliterate his program. Cut 45.
Mr. Minister, is Iran currently trying to assassinate President Trump, former Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, former Ambassador John Bolton, and other Trump administration officials in the wake of the death of Qasem Soleimani?
No. We have never said that. Maybe some individuals here or there have said things like that, but that has never been Iran's official position.
Mr. Minister, the Ayatollah has said death to America, and that means death to Trump. That is from the Supreme Leader. The New York Post had the Iranian Fatwa crowdfunding effort claims to have raised $40 million for bounty on President Trump's head. The campaign organized by a group known as the Blood Covenant comes after multiple Iranian clerics issued fatwas or death warrants against Trump. So you can see why the administration is looking at some of these signals, saying that you are doing that.
No, I think they are all propagandas.
So that's a case closed.
Yeah, I mean, don't believe what we say. We're just kind of kidding around. It's somebody else. We're not the number one state sponsor of Islamic terrorism in the entire world. We're not trying to sneak, you know, thousands of special interest aliens from Iran into your country into terrorist cells. This, once again, we've been dealing with Iran for, what, 47 years, going back to 1979, the hostage crisis. It was about time we stood up and we let them know that no more. Last time that happened, 1988, with Ronald Reagan Operation Praying Mantis. So we have to now continue to put the economic pressure on Iran. And really, that creates a domino effect. That affects China. That will affect North Korea. That will affect Russia. So that's how we have to see this from a strategic perspective.
Right. And he said Hamas and Hezbollah are fighting for freedom. Right, free what? Lebanon from a good life? Palestinians from enjoying themselves? So I have no idea. I thought Brett did a great job. But the foreign minister, he's got an impossible task, and that is selling a regime, not being a terrorist state, looking for peace in a hostile world. It's just an impossible thing to buy. Colonel, don't forget, coming up on the 23rd of August, KLIF
right.
Listeners, you're going to be on stage with me at least in the beginning, I hope.
Well, not to the end. Well, look, I'll be happy to share the stage with you. And, you know, we got a bunch of folks that really want to meet you. I have a former police officer and former Army officer from Long Island who wants to get an opportunity to shake your hand, Jimmy Angelino. So we're just ready to embrace you down here in Dallas, Texas, and see you. And it's going to be a great night, Brian.
Let me know, because we'll get him in the VIP section. So we'll come early and he'll have a chance to talk to everybody. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, on the 23rd, go to BrianKilmeade.com. Thanks, Colonel.
My pleasure. God bless.
All right. Listen, when we come back, I'll be able to squeeze in some calls. Or you want to write me at BrianKilmeade.com. Just click on comments coming down. Also, I want to play a little of what Stephen Colbert, his show sounded like last night, as every late night host outside Jimmy Kimmel showed up. Don't move.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
In a completely unrelated story, on Friday, Donald Trump posted, "I absolutely love that Colbert got fired. His talent was even less than his ratings."
How dare you, sir? Would an untalented man be able to compose the following satirical witticism? Go f*** yourself.
The president went on, "I hear Jimmy Kimmel is next." Nope. No, absolutely not, Kimmel. I am the martyr, okay? Okay, there's only room for one on this cross, and I gotta tell you,
The view is fantastic from up here.
Well, Jon Stewart is obviously was the executive producer of the show, maybe a name only, but really gave Stephen Colbert his big break on The Daily Show. Now he's back on The Daily Show on Mondays. And he, Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers, I guess Anderson Cooper, and who's the other guy from The Housewives show?
Andy Cohen,
John Oliver, all in various did mock-up things of the Coldplay concert, of just supporting Stephen Colbert in the audience. I guess you have to watch the whole thing. From the clips I saw, really not funny, but they just wanted to show their support. But they very well could be following the same fate. Seth Meyers, does anyone talk about that show? I mean, the ratings are terrible. They don't even think it's a one. They told him you can keep the job if you lose your band. What? Okay, I'll stay. And then you have Jimmy Fallon's down to 4 days a week to save money. They only do 4 days a week of shows, okay? He is up in 28. Jimmy Kimmel's up this year. But, you know, it's hard to disband the Tonight Show franchise, don't you think? Don't you think that's harder to do than the Late Show?
I would agree with that. I mean,
because it's got history.
That is the argument for even both of them. Like, it is sort of the culture of America. However, when they're like, we're number one in the ratings, how dare they? It's like, that means nothing now. And then, you know, they don't mention how Gutfeld's doing so much better. And also just the dollars and cents of it.
Yeah,
they're not making money.
Yeah, here's what Jimmy Fallon said. They all went to bat to him different ways, whether it's their show or on his show. Cut 19.
I am your host, well, at least for tonight. I don't like it. I don't like what's going on one bit. These are crazy times. This morning, my dad called me and said he's officially a Kimmel guy. I go, wait, what's... That's right, everybody is talking about CBS's decision to end The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and many people are now threatening to boycott the network. Yep. CBS could lose millions of viewers plus tens of hundreds watching on Paramount Plus.
So, all right. I don't know. I mean, that's not really not going to bat for him. I don't know. I didn't think that would. I have that. I did DVR that show, so I want to check that out. I watched Jon Stewart. The whole thing was on Epstein, and then he just did a musical salute to Stephen Colbert. But he wonders if he's going to suffer the same fate or The Daily Show is. Does that make money, you think?
The Daily Show?
Yeah. I mean, does that make money? Because he's four other substitute hosts. He's the one host. I don't know any, you know, when the other guy was hosting it, I never heard anything about it. So it's not even culturally important. What would we do without it? Here's a little of Jon Stewart. Cut 18.
I understand the corporate fear. I understand the fear that you and your advertisers have with $8 billion at stake. But understand this, truly, the shows that you now seek to cancel, censor, and control, a not insignificant portion of that $8 billion value came from those shows.
I don't know. They got to just decide. I mean, you would think, what I hear is as this group Skydance gets prepared to take over CBS... The term they said, it's a melting ice cube. They couldn't believe how much the television channels and the locals are losing in money. So when you come in, you've got no attachment to these people and to these shows. You don't have any history of hiring. You go, okay, you're gone.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Bottom of the hour, David Bonson's going to make heads and tails over our economy. We hear contradictory things, but so many numbers are going strong. And we hear a trade deal could be coming down quickly with the Philippines, whose president is in Washington right now. And then we'll do a simulcast with Stuart Varney on FBN. With me in studio is Curtis Sliwa, one of four, looking to become the mayor of New York City. We'll get to Curtis in a moment, but first let's get to the big three.
Number three.
On Friday, Donald Trump posted, I absolutely love that Colbert got fired. How dare you, sir? Would an untalented man be able to compose the following satirical witticism? Go f*** yourself.
And the crowd roars, but the Late Show loser is done. Stephen Colbert gets a lot of support and uses a lot of expletives, but this is all about money, and his show is losing a ton of it.
Number two.
Secretary said it, Rodney said it. Sanctuary cities are sanctuaries for criminals. Hard stop. New York City, how many times do you want to see NYPD attacked by illegal alien criminals in the city?
That is Tom Homan yesterday. Sanctuary standoff. More criminals running wild in another illegal immigrant sanctuary metropolis called New York City. What the Trump team is vowing to do.
Number one.
And I'll tell you what, I know exactly what happened in that debate. He flew around the world, basically, the mileage that he could have flown around the world 3 times.
Yeah.
He's 81 years old. He's tired as shit. You give him Ambien to be able to sleep. He gets up on the stage, and he looks like he's a deer in the headlights.
Are you kidding me? You suddenly say your dad's on Ambien? Hunter uses his verbal howitzer to blow away his party on behalf of his family, and he's managed to do the impossible, embarrassing himself further and sully his dad even more. We'll talk about that as the revelation that he's on Ambien during the debate. Who knows what else he's on? Remember, Trump said in the past, he's always said he thinks he's on something. Well, Curtis Lee was not on anything. In fact, he took the subway to get here, turns down private security to run here. He is New York City's own, who's never lived anywhere else. Right, Curtis?
No, I'm the consummate New Yorker running here. As you see, Zohran is off in Uganda for 2 weeks. Andrew Cuomo is out in the Hamptons.
Raising money?
Right, and Eric Adams lives in Fort Lee, New Jersey, as we all know. I'm the only person who's born and raised in New York, and you know I'll probably die in New York.
Well, not for a while. The Gotti's tried that, didn't they?
Yes, they did. 5 hollow point bullets didn't do the trick.
Right. First off, just on the Hunter Biden situation, I mean, he goes out and he just eviscerated every Democrat. Rahm Emanuel, David Axelrod, James Carville, Nancy Pelosi. Who the hell does George Clooney think he is? Do you think the family puts him up to this? Or do they think the guy just decides, I'm just going to just do what I want?
I think we've looked at the Biden family enough to know it is one big dysfunctional family where nobody seems to be in charge. And Hunter Biden, I don't know. He's probably still on some kind of substance. He just is so erratic. And now he's basically dropping dime on his daddy, saying he was on something all during his presidency, which is what many of us came to the conclusion of. He had cognitive problems. And yet here's Hunter Biden, who's lucky not to be in jail, right, running his mouth a mile a minute and doing more damage to the party that elevated his father to the presidency, the Democratic Party.
So, Curtis, you're running, right, in a 4-person race. In the last poll, I think it was a Harris poll.
Yeah.
You're within the margin of error. So it's Mamdani, Cuomo, you, and then Eric Adams. What is your path to victory?
Well, the path to victory is we're watching the self-destruction of the sitting mayor, Eric Adams. In fact, this morning as I was on the subway, you know, people were asking me that Eric Adams last night at about 12:05 in the morning was tweeting out, "It's going down. Meet me after school tomorrow." I hope if there are reporters listening out there, they follow up on this. This is one of the most bizarre tweets or statements ever made.
What does it mean?
Well, first off, there's no school. It's summertime.
Right. He should be out of school.
Right. I have no idea. You know, he likes to hang out at the hookah lounge, you know, and smoke on the hookah pipe. But this is beyond acceptable. I think what he has to do is, if he's going to be serious running for reelection, he's got to discard all of his corrupt cronies that he's brought back into his campaign. And he has to address this sanctuary city issue.
Yes.
Kristi Noem yesterday eviscerated him. And I'll tell you why. There are 3 candidates I'm running against: Zohran, Cuomo, and Adams. All of them are for sanctuary city status. I'm opposed to it. The mayor had an opportunity twice to put it up for a vote. It's called initiative and referendum. Every year there's initiative and referendums in local elections. Twice he chose not to. This was similar in 2023. The Chicago City Council would not permit it to be put up for a vote of the people of Chicago because the majority black vote would have voted to end sanctuary city status. I know New York City would have voted. The voters would have voted to end sanctuary city status. Eric Adams twice had the chance and wouldn't do it. He defends sanctuary city status. I'm the only candidate opposed to it.
Tell me about your take on what happened on Sunday with the federal agent being attacked right by the lake by two guys, illegal immigrants on a moped with lengthy rap sheets. What's your take on that, Curtis?
This is up in Washington Heights, Inwood, predominantly Dominican community. These were Dominican thugs who had already indicated as illegals that they were enemies of society. Notice, both of them, they had huge records, and they were being turned loose, not just here, but in other places.
Massachusetts.
They were committing crimes. And they were on mopeds, and what they would do is drive around on the mopeds and just snatch phones, snatch jewelry, and oftentimes at gunpoint. In this case, this agent was off duty, obviously in New York with a young lady, and he was forced to defend his life. They pulled a gun out, and they blasted him. This is happening all the time. And that's why ICE has to have, with impunity, the opportunity to get, as Donald Trump called them, all the bad hombres out of here. Gangbangers, drug dealers, sex traffickers, you know, narco-terrorists. There are so many there that it takes a little bit of time to do the research, ICE, but eventually they're going to get their men and women, and we need to be assisting them in ridding them of our city because they become a menace to everybody.
I want you to hear this exchange in case you missed it. This is Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy, and he, you know, is taking a personal interest in New York. Congestion pricing, fix Penn Station, what's with the crime in the subways, right? Here's the exchange with Congressman Nadler.
Secretary Duffy, as recently as last week, you again attacked the MTA, claiming there's a surge in subway assaults and accusing the agency of withholding information. But many of your statements misrepresent the facts and ignore documentation already provided to your department. I want to address some of those claims directly. First, are you aware that major crime in the transit system, including assaults, is down 3% since last year and down 8% since 2019?
Well, I would say,
that's a yes or no question.
Well, no, that's wrong. The assaults that we've seen are up 60% with MTA in the system since 2019.
Why do you continue to ignore this and lie about this in your public comments?
Well, my question, why do you continue to lie about people being lit on fire in subways or pushed in front of trains? You should be fighting to make sure your subways are safe.
Our subways
are... want people to ride subways. Let's make subways safe.
Reclaiming my time. Our subways are safe, and I gave you the statistics.
They're wrong.
What do you think, Curtis?
Well, first off, this is Gerald Nadler, who in the summer of George Floyd 2020 said Antifa was just a concept. Remember, Antifa broke my jaw while we were fighting them, protecting people in the streets of New York when Bill de Blasio ordered the police to stand back. It's not a concept. They're real. But Gerald Nadler doesn't take the subways. I take the subways every day.
He couldn't get down the stairs.
No. And the Secretary of Transportation is from New Jersey. So he's come into the city quite regularly.
And he worked at 48th and 6th.
Exactly. So it's not like he was from Arkansas or from Oregon. I had no idea the subways. Assaults are up. Crime is just out of control in the subways. It's not safe. It's the veins and arteries of the city. We can never recover unless there's safety in the subways. And I'm the only candidate who would know exactly what to do because I campaign in the subways. Well, number one, you have to get the police actually traveling on the trains. They're positioned at the turnstiles. They're positioned on the waiting platforms. They're not in the moving trains. That's where most of the action is taking place. You must remove the homeless. You must remove the emotionally disturbed. Get them the help they need. We spent all this money, $7 billion, on illegal aliens. And we're not spending money taking care of our own American homeless and emotionally disturbed. That's a sin. Shame on us as Americans. We should be taking care of our own.
Well, did De Blasio disband the homeless unit within the police department?
When he defunded the police department by $1 billion, the untold story, and thanks for bringing it up, Ryan, you remember there was a homeless outreach unit that I and the Guardian Angels used to work with. These were men and women cops who dedicated themselves. They go in and out.
They knew the names of everybody. They knew their problems, their medications.
They go in and out of the shelters. They knew the directors. They knew the security. Do you know the NYPD cannot go into either a migrant shelter or a normal shelter now unless there's a 911 call? So assuming you're walking a beat, director, could I use the bathroom? You're not permitted in the shelter. It may cause post-traumatic shock syndrome to our clients. Imagine what you would feel like as a police officer. Migrant shelters and regular shelters, you're not even permitted to go inside unless there's a 911 call.
Where'd that rule come from?
It was de Blasio's rule, Cuomo's rule, and now Eric Adams' rule.
Why do you think Cuomo lost?
because he mailed it in. Look at him. The last 3 weekends, he's been with his billionaire friends in the Hamptons. He spoke at a synagogue in the Hamptons, and he blamed Jews for him losing. He said, more than 50% of you voted for Zoran. That's ridiculous. You would never know how many Jews voted. They don't have that on the voting rolls. He needs to take culpability, but he's not ready for prime time. He's lost it. And remember, this is the guy wherever I go, Brian. People say that's the guy who's slapping fannies and killing grannies. He'll never get over that.
How much did he cost the city in legal fees and fines?
The state, Tom DiNapoli, Democratic state controller, said the bill is up to about $63 million from all the sexual harassment charges because the state has to defend him. He has qualified immunity like civil servants do. And guess who doesn't have qualified immunity because of Cuomo? Police officers. That's why they don't do interventions, because they can be personally sued. They're the only civil servants who can be personally sued for actions that they take on our behalf.
So why would you put yourself in danger and your family? You're making, what, $35,000 when you start, or $55,000 when you start? And all of a sudden there's a domestic dispute going on, and thinking to myself, wow, I don't want to get sued by both these people.
Well, Zoran Mandami doesn't even want cops dealing with domestic disputes. I've dealt with so many in tandem with the cops and the guardian angels. He wants social workers to deal with it. Let me tell you this. If that were ever put into effect, women would die, children would die, and blood would be on Zoran's hands.
We're going to take a short time out. Curtis, if people have to run from the radio right now and they want to support your candidacy, where do they go?
SliwaForNYC.com. That's SliwaForNYC.com.
Are there going to be debates, do you know?
Yes, there'll be two, one in September, one in October, and I can't wait.
So it's going to be the four of you or five of you? There's another.
There'll be five. A guy named Jim Walden. He's 1% Walden. But you know I'm going right at Zoran, right at Cuomo, right at Adams, because they're for migrants voting and they're for sanctuary cities. And I will not forgive nor forget that they created Zoran Mandami by failing us as governor and failing us as mayor.
He thinks he won already, doesn't he?
Oh, he's off in Uganda. He's having his... I guess he's calling it his honeymoon that he didn't have. Was that an arranged marriage? I mean, how come the wife is never out there? My wife, Nancy, is there with me everywhere, like yesterday when we were calling for no-kill shelters and putting animal abusers in jail. That's my wife right next to me. How come? Oh, that's right, Cuomo. Oh, Adams.
Yeah.
Yeah, we need a first lady. That should be Nancy Sliwa.
Back in a moment.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Fox News Audio presents Unsolved with James Patterson. Every crime tells a story, but some stories are left unfinished.
Somebody knows.
Real cases, real people. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The lie about New York destination.
You're lying. Don't call me a liar here.
I'm calling you a liar because you've lied continually.
This is the one area where you have to pay $9 every single day to access Manhattan. That doesn't exist anywhere else.
Every single program where you have tolled highways is under the same
program. Why don't we fight for the people who can't afford to pay that pricing? Why shouldn't everyone have access to the city? And if you're going to force people into a subway, make sure it's safe. Very simple.
It's safe. I gave you the statistics.
I gave you the stats.
Well, your statistics are wrong.
So what'd you think about this? This is a New York battle taking place between Sean Duffy and Congressman Nadler, who's an embarrassment to the city, Curtis Sliwa.
I'm the only candidate opposed to congestion pricing. So the transportation secretary is correct. Donald Trump is correct, our president. And yet, you notice that Adams and Cuomo, who devised it, and Mandami are in favor of it. And all of your national audience, understand this. Congestion pricing in New York City now, they want to expand it to every major urban area north of the Mason-Dixon line. It's another tax, and it's a tax on the blue-collar working class.
You know what they say it is? It's to keep these cities green. There's too much gas going through the city. What's your feeling on that?
No, it's basically to offset fare evasion, people who are not paying their bus fare. That's why I laugh. Mondanami says free bus fare. Half the people don't pay their bus fare to begin with. We're halfway there. One-third don't pay their subway fare. They lose $800 million because they won't enforce the fare. I am the only candidate who says we're going to have enforcement. You're going to pay your fare or you're going to get arrested.
So I know what you stand for. Give me your game plan. Because you have Mondani, who's a Marxist socialist. You have Cuomo, who's a washed-up Democrat. And then you have Eric Adams, just overcoming an indictment and the support of Donald Trump, which is a negative. So what's your strategy to winning?
I'm the only Republican. And as I tell people, we have Republican values that the other three candidates don't. They're all Democrats. I start with close to 30% of the vote from the last time I lost with Eric Adams. Do the math. Four candidates. If I start with 28 to 30%, I get a few more percentage points. Brian, you're talking to the mayor right here, and I have a special first-time independent line, Protect Animals, which a lot of people love. You know, the Pew Research studies.
But that's real with you.
Yes, it's real. I and my wife, Nancy, we live it. We rescue animals from the shelter who would be euthanized. We're going to have no-kill shelters and put animal abusers in jail. And believe it or not, people who voted for Harris and Trump, they can agree on that. A lot of people will never vote for a Republican, but they'll vote for me on the Protect the Animals line.
It's so interesting. So when you look at the vulnerability of Mondami, are you going to be the one to go at him? Or, for example, Adams is going to go after Cuomo. Are you going after Mondami? Are you going to go after them individually, collectively?
You have to go into the neighborhoods where Mondami is strong with the millennials and Gen Zers. Those are my followers. In fact, if you look at poll after poll, I get more independents than any other candidate. Generally, younger people do not sign up with a party any longer like our parents did or grandparents. They sign up as independents. That's the route to victory. So with Republicans and independents, I can become the next mayor and some moderate Democrats and animal lovers. But you have to be in the same neighborhood as Mondami. If you're not, you're sacrificing all these millennials and Gen Zers. Trump, in his previous election to get elected, went after the millennial and Gen Z males and did an enormously effective job through the RNC and Larry Trump, you know, in getting them on board. Probably provided the margin for his popular victory vote and in the seven battleground states.
So what do you do with the Republican Party? It's not nearly as strong as the Democratic Party in New York City.
No. And in fact, there are less and less Republicans because they're the ones moving to Florida or unfortunately they passed away.
Even Cuomo says he's moving to Florida.
Yes.
If he loses.
No, he's already planning his exit strategy. He's out of here. I preach you must improve, not move. If for some reason I lose, I'm not cutting and running. I'm going to be battling Mondami and the socialists to the day I die because this is their crown jewel. They want to take the epicenter of capitalism. They want to turn it into a socialist enclave over my dead body. That ain't happening.
Have you talked to any of these banks that are just giving the Heisman to Mondami, who are the bankers and the business people who don't want him here?
Oh, well, they claim they don't want him here, but they run hedge funds. They're hedging their bets, Brian. They're meeting with him back to as we speak.
Kurt, if people want to support you, where do they go?
Go to SliwaForNYC.com. I will never forsake you, and I am not running to Florida. I'm going to fight for what I know is right and prove don't move.
Right.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at FoxNewsPodcast.com. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
They're going to love the deals that President Trump and I are doing. I mean, they're just going to love them. You know, the president figured out the right answer and sent letters to these countries, said this is going to fix the trade deficit. This will go a long way to fixing the trade deficit. And that's gotten these countries to the table. And they're going to open their markets or they're going to pay the tariff. And if they open their markets, the opportunity for Americans to export, to grow their business, farmers, ranchers, fishermen, this is going to be, the next 2 weeks are going to be weeks for the record books. President Trump is going to deliver for the American people.
So that is Howard Lutnick, the Commerce Secretary, doing the cheerleading on Face the Nation over the weekend. And we'll look at trade deals. August 1st coming quickly. And what do we know? The president of the Philippines is here. What else do we know? That Indonesia and Vietnam and the UK are done. So Philippines in the region, very friendly with us. You would imagine there'd be something positive there. but it's not the big deals we're looking for. Let's bring in David Bahnsen from the Bahnsen Group, CIO, founder, and managing partner, and author of Full-Time Work and the Meaning of Life. David, your thoughts about Howard Lutnick said he's looking for deals to come in. If not, you're going to get letters. What does it mean for an economics guy?
Well, look, my first disagreement with Secretary Lutnick is that he says we're going to fix the problem of trade deficits, and I don't agree that trade deficits are inherently a problem. But if what he means is we're going to get improvement in opening more markets, then that would, of course, would be a good thing, and it would have been wonderful for that to be the stated policy intention to begin with, because that's what I love is more trade, more activity, more opportunity for both importers and exporters of American businesses. That's ultimate America first economic agenda. More trade.
All right. And what are you hearing? What country is closest?
I believe Japan is closer. And it's not because I think the European Union deal is vulnerable. It's just because the European Union deal is 27 countries. It's very complicated. We know that Philippines, which is a much smaller situation, is apparently imminent. But I do believe that there's going to be an announcement with Japan sooner than later.
How would the market react to that?
I think it's basically priced in. If we mean the stock market, the bond market, financial markets have largely expected a lot of those things. The thing that really matters right now, Brian, is impact to small business. You know, it just doesn't get any attention because NVIDIA stock goes up, the S&P goes up, everyone thinks everything's fine. There are hundreds, and I mean hundreds, or thousands of small businesses that are at a standstill waiting to get clarity. You know,
what kind of businesses would be affected by global trade?
Well, the most primary examples of who I'm talking to, it's 130 businesses. I've personally talked to the owners of the business that have referred to placing an order that then after the order is placed, something changes and then they end up with a tariff bill at the port. Okay, that's a significant issue, and these aren't big public companies with access to capital markets that can kind of buy their way through it, let alone access to lobbyists to get exceptions and waivers, all that kind of stuff. So I think that you have a high amount of American importers that make something, and often they import something into their manufacturing. It's 40% of our imports. 37% of our imports from China are American importers that are making something once it gets here. It's unfinished goods, part of the processing. So I think that that's a big uncertainty, and Japan is a part of that. We bring in a lot of unfinished goods from Japan. If we get a good deal there, that's going to help kind of bring clarity to markets.
So listen to what the Treasury Secretary, who I know you like, Scott Bessent. He was a good choice, right?
Yeah, very, very good choice.
Yeah, cut 21.
Imagine that, steel and AI, and you know, it's a very diversified building boom. We're seeing companies from all over the world want to come in. You mentioned the AstraZeneca, and I can tell you we're about to announce a rash of trade deals in the coming days, and a lot of these trade deals are going to include substantial investments in the U.S., whether it's autos, semiconductors, and pharmaceuticals.
So can you read between the lines? You know him personally. He's not like Lutnick. He's not a seller.
No.
He's a fat guy.
Yeah. And not only is that the public persona you're referring to, which I like publicly, but privately, he's also really good at having a calming effect on the president to explain, here's what you want to accomplish, but here's some of the trade-offs. Here's some of the side effects. That's where I personally think Pete Navarro, and to a certain degree, Secretary Lutnick, too, went astray early on, is they didn't properly prepare the president for some of the trade-offs. I think Secretary Bessent's a much more sober voice in that regard.
Absolutely. Investments under Trump. Apple has pledged $500 billion. Some people say wait and see on that. We have Project Stargate, $500 billion. That is Stargate.
SoftBank. Well, it's a consortium of a big group of different people that have all pledged.
That was in the Oval. NVIDIA, we know $500 billion. Do you think that's coming back here?
About $430 billion of that already was. So
what do you mean, in the chip deal?
Yeah, we have to separate what some of these announcements from what they were already doing versus what.
That's why I have you here, yeah. David. Micron Technology, $200 billion. Yeah. IBM, $150 billion. Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company is $100 billion. Now, on the surface, that's what we need, right? Some of those chips coming out of Taiwan here. But is there a but?
The only but is on a lot of the deals. They just simply were things that were already in motion. They're not related to tariffs at all. Taiwan Semiconductor was announcing.
I think it's more related to Trump taking over.
Yeah, but it, not in Taiwan Semiconductor's case. That Arizona investment was massive. That was, I mean, some of that was back to Trump's first term. I mean, this was just something that they were wanting to onshore. There's a lot of ongoing evolution here. The one that like that the SoftBank deal, and yesterday they said, okay, well, we said $500 billion, we haven't done anything yet, and those things concern me. Now, look, it doesn't concern me politically. The president's a sales guy, a real estate guy. He loves the headlines, but then when you look to future investment. I've been really humbled by the Johnson & Johnson inclusion in President Trump's Rose Garden announcement on April 2nd, Liberation Day.
He said that was doing, $55 billion.
Yes, but $42 billion of it they'd already been doing. And so I've owned Johnson & Johnson for 23 years. My company owns hundreds of millions of dollars of the stock. And I said, what's he talking about? I go and looked in it. And they basically had increased over 5 years by $8 billion, $2 billion a year. That's fine. He has every right to go hype up announcements. That's what politicians do. But where there's things that don't ever happen, that ends up hurting him. That's why I was critical of the Doge thing, overselling, under-delivering. I want to under-promise and over-deliver. So a $500 billion announcement from a company that has no possible way of knowing that they're going to be able to do that much over 5 years, 10 years, I think that becomes problematic. It sets a certain expectation in. The Taiwan deal is real. A lot of the pharmaceutical and semiconductor onshoring is very good for the country. I'd focus on those things that are matters of critical infrastructure.
So I'm looking at this report in Axios today, and it says higher-earning Americans, and they got the – they have what it looks like an EKG machine, judging by the years in the bottom, are feeling pretty good these days. It's like their optimism is going up, but the sentiment among those at the bottom is stagnating at much lower levels. Do you translate that into prices of items when I go to the grocery stores, if I want to get a new car?
That has been the case through the inflation we had in 2022, but I think the biggest issue is always how people feel at different economic rungs on the ladder is wages. Is when wages are growing, real wages are growing, people always feel better. So lower income people really pulled well on this in the first Trump term because their real wages did grow the most since financial crisis. Right now, I suspect we just need more time to see real wages increase. But the reason why people at the higher end feel good is because they own assets and things like the stock market, real estate. When those things are going higher, they generally are going to feel better. We're an ownership-oriented society. But where you need the lower deciles of wage earners to feel better is their wages have to go higher.
April 21st is so-called Liberation Day.
What April 2nd.
April 2nd. Yeah. What did you think then? And what do you think now that we're in July?
It was an incredibly disappointing day for me as someone who supports so much of the president's economic agenda about tax cuts, about deregulation, about energy,
which he's
independence.
Doing.
All of those things that he has done, I still want to see them cut spending more. But I am a real supply side Reaganite supporter of the vast majority, but not all of President Trump's agenda. April 2nd was not what we were expecting. They were linking the trade policy to countries that dared to sell us more things than we sold them. And there's just simply nothing wrong with
but
that.
But since, in and, that gap, yeah, I know how you felt then. I think you did our show that day.
I did. And 5 days later, I think Secretary Bessent became the cooler head who prevailed versus some of the other folks that were advising the president. And I think now we've seen months play out, and it's very clear to me that the president got what we call, I'd say to my clients, market discipline. The president has no interest in a stock market collapse, a bond market collapse, a currency collapse under his watch. And he realizes we have to go through it a certain way. But he's a deal maker and negotiator. I don't always agree with the things said, but I do understand they're trying to get to a point of deals. So if in the end, look, I think a lot of people on MAGA are going to be upset, not people like me, because I think we're going to be trading more with China, not less with China. That's different than a lot of people expected, but it's probably better for the economy, certainly better for markets.
All right. It's so interesting to talk to you, David. David Bonson, the Bonson Group. There's so many different balls in the air right now with the economy. Some things unprecedented, and we have an August 1st deadline, so there's a reason to do deals. So hopefully they'll come in and they'll make our country better. David, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. Listen, we're going to come back. I do a simulcast with Stuart Varney, and then I'll have some time at the bottom after that to take some calls. You listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
It's The Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. We just got a couple of minutes. We're going to go with Stuart Varney and talk about what's going on in the rest of the world and, of course, what's going on with Hunter Biden. It's one of the most extraordinary things that's happened in the whole since the Bidens lost the election to see Hunter Biden give a somewhat sober interview with Jamie Harrison, the former DNC director, and then yesterday released, I don't know when it was taped, come out and just eviscerate every Democrat. So let's listen to Stuart Varney.
Boom, it is now 10:51 Eastern time. That means it's Kilmeade time. All right, Brian, former FBI director James Comey breaking his silence after the Department of Justice fired his daughter. Watch this.
The reservoir is in grave danger right now. Trump and the hacks who lead the Department of Justice are hammering at the dam day after day, trying to turn it into just another gold leaf covered Trump subsidiary. Our best hope is that good people will stay and do what Maureen asked. Have the courage to do the right thing always. There are going to be hard weeks in the Trump era, and this was one for my family. But there are plenty of good people still in the department committed to doing things the right way.
Brian, he seems a little dramatic, doesn't he?
I would think so. Number one, he's being held hostage in an attic somewhere, so please go to save him. It's kind of not hard to pick him out. He's 6'9". But first off, this is the same James Comey who said through a sophisticated series of channels, the Russians have infiltrated our election when it was Facebook ads and he knew better. And that's another part of a parallel track which we're going through. James Comey has been, since 2016, embarrassing himself almost every time he speaks, and he seems to be the only one who doesn't know it, outside Stephen Colbert, who's going to be losing a job soon. So James Comey has absolutely no credibility. The last time we saw him say something, he was, I saw a rock pattern of 69 or whatever it was, 86, and meaning 86 Trump, which many people thought was kill Trump. And then he had to walk himself back from that with his book tour. And now his daughter got fired from the Southern District of New York. I mean, part of it was she was in charge of, I believe, played a key role with the P. Diddy prosecution. Didn't seem to have gone too well.
Yeah, you got it. I got a different subject for you now. Hunter Biden. He attacked George Clooney. It was recently, and it was a profanity-filled interview. I know you've seen this, Brian, but watch it again. It's instructive. Roll tape.
Him and everybody around him. I don't have to be nice. Number one, I agree with Quentin Tarantino. George Clooney is not a actor. He is a I don't know what he is. He's a brand. And by the way, and God bless him. You know what? He supposedly treats his friends really well. You know what I mean? Buys them things. And he's got a really great place in Lake Como. And he's great friends with Barack Obama. You. What do you have to do with anything?
This is not what the Democrats want right now, is it? I mean, he's dragging the Biden problem right back into the public view when he didn't need to. And he seems unhinged, Brian.
Absolutely. God bless him. He has a house in Lake Como. What is he? Did someone just say whatever comes into your mind? George Clooney, a brand, a good actor? I don't care what Hunter Biden thinks of George Clooney. George Clooney had a fundraiser for Joe Biden. That's more than 99% of the people that voted for Joe Biden. He had him come back to do the fundraiser with every star in the world. He got all the money. And then he looked at his dad and said, this guy's in a coma. I can't possibly support him. I'll write a column saying what I see. And George Clooney's the problem because Quentin Tarantino, an unhinged but accomplished director, thinks he's overrated as an actor. Okay, I'm not really caring. I'm on the fence on this, though, Stuart. Do the Bidens want him to do this? The more I listen to this, the more I listen to the cuts, I don't think this is the Biden plan. Because at the end of the day, he's blowing up every ally. Axelrod, Carville, Rahm Emanuel, Nancy Pelosi, of course, all the leadership. Now he's got the key donors and actors. Okay, at the end of the day, if your goal was to leave Joe Biden with nothing but him and Jill, congratulations, because who's going to pay for that library?
Fair enough. Good question, Brian. Thanks for joining us. Well, I know we'll see you again later. Kevin O'Leary with me.
All right. See if Kevin O'Leary agrees with me or not. Let's go to Susan in upstate New York. Hey, Susan.
Hi, that was a great interview with Curtis, and he is getting momentum But when he says he's going to go after Gen Zers, you know, President Trump got 786,000 votes in New York City in 2024. Curtis got 331,000 votes when he ran for mayor. So he also needs to look at those districts, those assembly districts where President Trump was strong, and get some votes and talk more as much about children and charter schools like the Success Academy in Harlem. We need more of those. He can save animals and children at the same time.
You're right. Expand your swath. He's great on crime, too. And he can figure out things on the economy, and I think he'll get a good staff. He does need a master strategist to navigate through this Democratic primary. The one thing I would, not the Democratic, this Democratic-run city, but the one thing I would love to see is making some gains where Republicans don't usually make gains in the black community in New York. He said Trump has made a lot of gains with a lot of different ethnic groups, but when it comes to New York, did not make gains with the African-American community. And Eric Adams evidently has dropped significantly because of his relationship with Donald Trump in the black community, because they have a good relationship. So that's it. That's a place where you would think he might be able to make some gains, especially if people point out how much Governor Cuomo has cost New York, $61 million, let alone the no cash bail, the no fracking we're watching with crime and no punishment that we've seen here. So the overruns on everything on these two airport programs that he had, rebuilds that he had. Well, I'm glad the airports are rebuilt, but evidently it's five times over what it was supposed to be spent on. The guy's got a terrible track record. So maybe there's something, if you look at the last poll, a place for Curtis, there might be a place to go. I know Governor Pataki had a column that said he could win with 28%. So that's important. Appreciate the call, Susan. 1-866-408-7669. Don't forget, BrianKilmeade.com is the place to get tickets for August 23rd. I'm going to be in Dallas, Texas, and then on the 27th of September in Richmond with History, Liberty, and Laughs. This is not just me talking, which is fascinating enough. It is a show, and it's going to be streaming and produced with Fox Nation. So I know you're going to love it. BrianKilmeade.com. VIP opportunities remain. Keep it here. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We got a big show coming your way. We have this hour, we're going to be joined by, well, we're going to be joined by a lot of people, and many too few to mention. We're going to be we got Katie Pavlich on right now. Also, we're going to be following the latest news because the President of the United States, I'm sorry, my earpiece just came apart in my ear, so it's a little disconcerting. The President of the United States is meeting with the Filipino president right now. There's a lot of people on other channels saying, where's the president's 100 deals in 100 days or 90 deals in 90 days? They could be coming rapidly. No doubt about it. And joining us now is Katie Pavlich. Katie, the Filipino president is here. The EU chief representative was in late last week. And David Bonson just told me that Japan could be next. How important do you think it is to get these deals done by August 1st, or some of them?
Well, you know, August 1st is a little bit of an arbitrary deadline. But the sooner these deals can get done, the better, because it reduces uncertainty for the economy, right? And although a lot of the fear-mongering around tariffs and what these new negotiations would look like for the country and for prices for everyday Americans, that really hasn't panned out. But it's always good to get these deals locked in. And also it opens up more energy and time for additional deals to be done. You know, the president's constantly talking about how people are knocking on the door and he doesn't have, you know, more hours in the day to answer his phone. And I was actually at the Dubrovnik Forum 2 weeks ago, and there were countries in Eastern Europe clamoring to get in front of the administration to work on deals, whether it was LNG or, you know, discussing ongoing negotiations with the EU, which include not just trade, by the way, but issues of digital censorship and online disinformation, misinformation kind of control. So lots of different factors here, but it's always good to get these things wrapped up so they can move on to the next thing.
Yeah, I just saw that on Axios, they had two look like EKGs on how the sentiments since John Donald took it over the 6 months, how different sects of the society feel about the economy. And one thing is ticking up those who are middle to upper class. The working class does not feel just as optimistic. And I think that goes back to pricing and what's left of inflation, don't you think?
I do. And, you know, working class is always working really hard. There's never a lot of certainty when it comes to the working class. You know, prices are always changing. Companies are always hiring and firing. Obviously, the economy can be better in some instances than not. But, you know, the working class is the working class for a reason. They're always constantly working towards that next thing. And it's difficult when there's not upward mobility with the way the economy's been under Joe Biden. But President Trump is changing a lot of that. And, you know, the sentiment in terms of economic sentiment and consumerism, people are now spending more money than they were just a couple of months ago, which, of course, is a better sign for the economy overall. So the working class is always in a tough spot. And, you know, hopefully they can get some relief soon.
Katie Pavlich, Town Hall and Fox is with us now. So, as you know, Tulsi Gabbard late last week and then through the weekend talked about 100 pages that she released that shows the Obama administration essentially knew in September that the Russians didn't significantly affect the election, certainly not electronically, just through basically social media. But by December, it ends up being a whole plan to find out what the Russians did. And you heard James Comey come out and say back in 2017, as we play these clips back, they had a sophisticated and complex way of trying to infiltrate our elections and try to affect the result in favor of Donald Trump. Here's Tulsi Gabbard, cut 37.
Creating this piece of manufactured intelligence that claims that Russia had helped Donald Trump get elected contradicted every other assessment that had been made previously. The effect of what President Obama and his senior national security team did was subvert the will of the American people, undermining our democratic republic, and enacting what would be essentially a years-long coup against President Trump.
Tulsi, so many books have been written about this. What's new to you, Katie?
Well, what really stood out to me is that Tulsi Gabbard, who's now the current director of national intelligence, said that this operation essentially was ordered by former President Barack Obama during a national security meeting in December of 2016, manipulating the intelligence in order to sow doubt about President Trump's legitimate election in 2016 against Hillary Clinton. And that, of course, then set up all of the dominoes to fall. We then led into the entrapment of Michael Flynn. We then went into a special counsel investigation for a year and a half through Robert Mueller, which came up with nothing. It really hindered the president's ability to do much of what he's doing now and all the successes he's had in the first 6 months of his second term, because they were so bogged down with all of this, these claims and having to respond to subpoenas and testimony. And you'll remember that the first Trump administration was very cooperative with this investigation, knowing that it was completely made up and false. And so the fact that it was ordered by the former president of the United States to undermine the election, I just can't help but think about what we've seen over the course of the last 8 years, which is Democrats screaming about the need to protect democracy, and yet they were willing to use the full force of the federal government to undermine a legitimate election for years on end, and they've never let it go. And so I think that, you know, Obama being implicated at the very top levels of this, you know, you constantly hear when these scandals break is, oh, it was a rogue agency or it was a rogue couple of federal workers, when in reality you start pulling on these threads and a lot of high-level people knew about it, and not only knew about it but ordered it to happen, which dragged the country through a horrific time of division and instability. And Obama has nothing to say about it now. He sure had a lot to say in the past.
So, yeah, I mean, yet. So I was very curious to see how it's playing on other channels. Dan Abrams weighed in from whether it's Mediaite or anything else, but he or his, it could be his radio show. Here's some of what he said. Cut 40.
The allegation was that the Russians tried to help Donald Trump. They tried to do it by using social media. We know this from the Mueller indictments. We know this because this is what they have always told us, that this was an effort. No one in the government claimed that they hacked the election voting machines. No one has claimed that the election results, again, no one in the administration claimed that the results were actually tainted because of it. They talked about the efforts that the Russians made.
So that's so you want to expand on that?
Well, he's not explaining what they actually said. They didn't say that Russians tried to help Donald Trump by buying a few Facebook ads. They deliberately accused him of collusion. That was the main question for Robert Mueller, was did the Trump campaign collude with the Russian government to win an election? It wasn't a matter of Russia doing what they always do, which is try to tinker around the edges and get Americans to fight with each other on the internet and, you know, sow disinformation, real disinformation campaigns online. This was the federal government, the Department of Justice, after being ordered by Barack Obama, after manipulating intelligence to say that Donald Trump was a Russian asset, that he colluded to win the election, and we are going to say that he's an illegitimate president, and therefore we have justification to undermine everything he did. Hillary Clinton went on television, national television, many times and said Donald Trump is an illegitimate president. He will never be legitimate. And when you talk about this coup that was run for 4 years, that is exactly what happened. They continued to undermine him. They refused to accept the election results. And Barack Obama was the one at the top of it all.
Okay, here is Congressman Jim Himes on. He was critical of Tulsi coming out with what she came out with. By the way, more's coming. Let's listen.
What you saw from the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, was not just a lie, but a very dangerous lie. Because when you start throwing around language like sedition and treason, somebody's going to get hurt. Now, you pointed out that the Senate committee, then led by Marco Rubio, a Republican and now Secretary of State, found unanimously that Russia meddled in the election to try to assist Donald Trump. John Durham, special counsel appointed by Donald Trump, investigated this, found that the Senate report was correct.
So then he went on, and Tulsi's answered that question. She does not know why Horowitz and Durham and Mueller didn't find what she found.
Well, A, because the, quote, deep state wasn't being cooperative with the investigation. But again, with all due respect to the senator, there's a big difference between collusion, which is what they accused Trump of, and the Russians doing things on their own to try and meddle in the election. There's a huge distinction there. The Russians, the Chinese are constantly trying to meddle in elections. They're constantly sowing propaganda. They're constantly trying to get these information campaigns. It's why they have spies all over the country. This is what they do. It's espionage. But the fact is they continually and repeatedly accuse Donald Trump of colluding with the Russian government to win an election, so much so that the FBI in 2016 broke the law to obtain FISA warrants on Carter Page to spy on the campaign. And I remember covering this, and whenever, you know, Bill Barr went in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I believe it was, and dared to say that the government was spying on the Trump campaign, and all hell broke loose. It was like the senators couldn't believe he was using the S word. But that's exactly what they did. And they did it to come up with this whole idea that Donald Trump was an illegitimate president that they can undermine because he colluded with a foreign government, which they said was treason, to win an election, which, of course, we know was not true.
So Tulsi found thumb drives. She said a confidential source gave thumb drives to the FBI that contained State Department data acquired via cyber intrusion, including emails from Barack Obama and others, according to declassified appendix in June 2018, Justice Department, that the Inspector General found and handed over to Tulsi. But the feds declined to comprehensively analyze the drives due to concerns about individual data caught on the hack, despite an internal draft memo, including it was necessary to, quote, assessed the national security risk pertaining to Clinton's private server in her email. So Chuck Grassley, hardly a right-wing zealot, says this document shows an extreme lack of effort and due diligence in the FBI's investigation of Hillary Clinton's email usage and mishandling of highly classified data, the Comey's FBI's negligent approach, and perhaps intentional lack of effort in the Clinton investigation is a stark contrast to the full-throated investigation of the Trump-Russia collusion hoax.
I think Americans just generally want things to be treated fairly. You know, if you have to investigate something, fine, but don't just do it in a one-sided way that puts the credibility of the entire intelligence committee and the inspector general system at risk. I mean, that's what we saw here. And when you have inspector generals who go and do these investigations but still are concerned about some kind of political correctness or not going down that hallway because it might upset someone up the chain of command, that's not a real inspector general doing that work. I mean, you've seen this happen over and over and over again where mm-hmm. they come to some conclusion that isn't actually making any sense. And if you have any common sense, you can see exactly what went on there. There will be more information that comes out. And it just proves, again, that a lot of these investigations that either get dragged out or don't get to any kind of conclusion, it's a result of a lack of will to just go in and look for the information.
All right, Katie, thanks so much. I look forward to talking to you again. When's the next time you're on TV?
I'll be on The Five today, so I'll see you then.
All right, see you in New York.
Thanks,
that'll
guys.
Be great, Katie. Eric Bischoff's coming at the bottom of the hour, along with Real Woods. Who are they? They're Real American Freestyle, the chief marketing officer, media officer, as well as one of the outstanding wrestlers. Yes, Freestyle Wrestling, coming to Fox Nation. Big sponsor of this show, too, and it's really exciting. Some of the finest athletes in the world can finally be paid for what they do if they're not necessarily on the world team or going to the Olympics. Don't move.
Illuminating, intriguing, inculcating.
I know some of these words.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It is time to take the quiz.
It's five questions in less than 5 minutes. We ask people on the streets of New York City to play along. Let's see how you do.
Take the quiz every day at thequiz.fox. Then come back here to see how you did.
Thank you for taking the quiz.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
In terms of the things that continue to perpetuate the negative stereotype of people of color, we've always had the Cosby Show to hold up against that.
That is Malcolm Jamal Warner, who tragically at the age of 54 has died in Costa Rica. Looks like in a riptide, drowned. It's stunning. Director, actor, but known for the Cosby Show, been famous most of his life. Be really more of a director towards the end. I'm really mystified why he didn't become a bigger star, but he was fantastic with Cosby. Bill Cosby, believe it or not, weighed in. You know, he's defamed and he's been in jail and nobody wants to see him anymore. But for a while, he was one of the most admired people in America and said this about Malcolm Jamal Warner, Cut 52.
What do you want people to remember about him?
Oh, boy. He was never afraid to go to his room and study and make sure he followed whatever he had learned in the acting school he went to.
So he was a hard worker, but evidently he always came in ready to go, a true pro. He passes away at the age of 54. It sucks. Also, they tell you, it could happen to anybody at any time. I mean, he's probably a competent swimmer, but a riptide on an island, that's always going to be tough, I think, personally. The other thing on a minor note, just to add, it looks like President Trump is dead serious about getting the Redskin name back. I discussed it yesterday on the show with a former Redskin with the Cherokee heritage, and he says that his lineage goes all the way back to the Mayflower. They had first contacted the Indian side of his family with the Mayflower, and there were writings there where the American Indian refer to themselves in a Redskin way, and the people that are there symbolized by the Redskin logo, they're looked up to. They like the name Redskins. Here's Dan Dackage last night. He's on, as you know, OutKick, Cut 50.
My thoughts are, let's do this. Let's just end woke culture in sports immediately, Laura. Let's get the Redskins back. Let's get the Cleveland Indians back. Hell, Valparaiso used to be the Crusaders. Now they're the damn Beacons. I don't know why. Let's just do this. I think Trump needs to be a little bit careful here with the blackmail stuff.
Blackmail stuff. He said, maybe I'll hold off funding the new stadium, which is going to be right next to RFK Stadium if they rip that down. And more closer to the city that everyone seems happy with if you don't go back to the name Redskins. So I think it's kind of cool. 51.
I appreciate that.
But having said that, you're right. All these things in colleges started this. And, you know, we also saw, did we not, in advertising, products being taken off the shelf. Look, you brought me on to talk sports, whether it's college, whether it's the NFL, whatever it is. Just stop the nonsense. No one's going to get hurt. No one's going to be upset if it goes back to Redskins. I would say this, though. You know, Josh Harris, the owner of the Redskins, has said, you know, we're not going to do it. Well, of course he's going to say that, because if he says they're studying it, aren't going to buy Commander's gear out of fear. So change
Good
it
point.
Back. Hope he does.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. Listen, we got the Chiefs in Massapequa, my high school. They're trying to change it. President Trump is trying to stop it. Linda McMahon is helping out. I'll talk to her about that on One Nation on Sunday because the political correctness has got to stop. And I think our heritage is be something that should be embraced. And American Indians, I think people, if you just keep taking these names away, the questions will stop and the interest will wane. Who benefits from that? Nobody.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
On Saturday, August 30th, the next evolution in combat sports enters the ring and delivers a five-point belly-to-back suplex to the entire world of live televised sports. History will be made. For the first time ever, freestyle wrestling, civilization's oldest sport, is getting a modern makeover. With over 40 of the world's top freestyle wrestlers, Real American Freestyle is a brand new league with global appeal. This isn't just a showcase. It's a statement. On August 30th, 2025, Real American Freestyle changes the combat world's landscape forever. Join the movement. Join the team.
There you go. That is Eric Bischoff. He was doing the voiceover, and he's all part of this new launch. Real American Freestyle Wrestling is here. Chief Media Officer Eric Bischoff, with a rich history, he's a WWE Hall of Famer, knows how to put together a show, loves combat sports. Also in studio, if you're smart enough to get the feed, is Real Woods. He's Real American Freestyle Wrestler. Wrestles 145, right?
That's right.
Three-time NCAA All-American. How old are you?
Four-time.
Man? Four-time. I'm going to fire my biographer. When were you out of college?
Oh, 23.
Really?
Yep.
Because you look very young. So you're aging well. Did you go for the national team?
Yes, I did, and I am.
You're on the national team, too?
Yep.
All right, so you're about to sign. You're going pro.
I'm going pro.
What does it feel like?
It feels amazing. I think it feels just right in terms of my trajectory of my career. I had my last year of college wrestling, I had an injury, and it kind of held me back from what I know I'm capable of. You know, I underperformed from what I expected for myself, and now it's the perfect timing for this league. I think I'm going to be the biggest star there is.
It's going to be August 30th is the first one. So, Eric, what sold you on this? You go from the WWE, which is, and Hulk Hogan is also one of the founders.
Sure.
What makes you think this will work?
Well, you know, I wrestled in high school. I wrestled in college. I was involved in martial arts for a long time after that. So I've always been interested in combat sports and so had a certain appreciation for amateur wrestling, having spent just a little bit of time in it. And it's such an underserved sport. I just saw the potential. And knowing, you know, people like Real and a lot of the wrestlers that we've signed, they're really interesting people. They're disciplined. They train harder than just about any other athlete. They don't get the glory. They just keep their nose down and kick ass. And the characters that they bring to the table are so interesting that it just seemed like the right thing to do.
All right, so to do this, you got to introduce people to the sport that aren't wrestlers. How do you broaden out the appeal, Eric?
That's one of the big challenges. I'm coining the term edutainment because part of what we have to do is obviously entertain the audience with the action, the wrestlers, and getting the audience to know some of these athletes. That's a part of it. But they also have to understand the sport. So we've got Chael Sonnen. I don't know if you're familiar with Chael. He's coming in as a color commentator. Kurt Angle, former gold medalist, absolutely, worked at WWE, also a color commentator. And we've
will Hulk Hogan be on the broadcast?
Possibly. At some point, sure. At some point. He may be doing interviews. He'll obviously be interviewed there, and he'll be at the event for sure.
So this is really exciting. It's Fox Nation is going to be broadcasting, right? You have worked out a partnership with Fox Nation.
We did, and Brian, that's one of the. I was so excited I got to meet you and the team again yesterday. But the idea of being in business with Fox on this, it's such a great opportunity because nobody promotes better than Fox, and it's a great opportunity for us.
And real for you, you're on the national team, so you're shooting for the Olympics.
That's right.
Are you worried about anything being healthy enough for the Olympics being next year?
Being healthy. Say that again.
Healthy.
Healthy, yeah, no.
Because
no.
You're going at it.
No, I'm a competitor. I mean, I'm a professional. This is what I do. So, I mean, this competition isn't going to hurt me by any means. Competition's always great.
Who's your first match?
Darian Caldwell.
And what's that going to be like?
He's going to get ragdolled.
which means you're going to win.
That's what that
means. So what are we looking at? Are we looking at three periods? Are we looking at traditional stances? Are you guys on your feet all three periods? How long are they? Eric, what are the rules?
Three two-minute periods with a 30-second rest in between.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And you're on your feet the majority of the time. You have to earn being able to get them down and, you know, throw them around.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So what's going to be the main difference between pro and amateur? Because you don't want to lose the sanctity and the blessing from USA Wrestling or from the World Wrestling Body. But yet you want more entertainment value, incentives for throws and more combat.
I think because of the fact that we're sticking so closely to freestyle wrestling rules, and of course we are going to incentivize for more dramatic kind of offense, but for the most part, we're working well within the framework of freestyle wrestling rules. And we're also working with a lot of the coaches, top coaches from around the country, who are on the advisory board and helping us to shape this event so that we do kind of stay within the rails, so to speak.
You know what it reminds me of is very much like lacrosse. Because in college, the big schools, they're selling out all these arenas. You look at the NCAA's, Emory Memorial Day dominating. But when it comes to the pros, they didn't really have a place to go. Over the last 10 years, they're trying to establish themselves. But there's so many people who wrestle. There's so many people who play lacrosse. But they don't have the pro following. Feel like a pioneer reel in this way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is an amazing thing, especially being with Fox News or Fox Nation, being the streaming service. I mean,
yeah,
in wrestling, in wrestling my entire life, there's never been such a professional space that wrestling's been streamed on.
Right. So I mean, it comes around once every 4 years in the Olympics, and then you see it once a year for the NCAAs.
People get excited.
And the rest of the time, it's gone.
That's right.
You don't hear about it.
I know, like swimming, too. I mean, everybody cares about the swimming and the gymnastics. Olympic years.
Sure.
But your hope is to build it up along the way and to build up those matchups. It's not unlike everything else in wrestling. It's not Penn State against Iowa.
Right.
It's not, you're not making up teams.
That's right.
What about the thought process of making this an individual thing, Eric? Not a team sport. It's not.
No, I mean, that was their
it's not real team.
I think that's a beautiful thing about it is we've got a lot of big personalities in wrestling, but it's all held back by the fact that the audience is restricted under it's a college. It's an institutional audience. I mean, we have the freedom to express who we are a little more genuinely, a little more without any restriction.
With a little more flair.
With
That's
a little
one
more
of the
flair.
Things that I've learned, Brian, in working with a lot of these athletes is because it's amateur wrestling, they come up, you know, when you're 5 years old, you start wrestling, and it's kind of drilled into their heads, be humble, work hard, respect your opponent, respect the sport. And that's one of the things so many of them have in common, but we're trying to kind of get them
get
out
that
of that
personality.
A little bit. Go ahead and
you got his personality out. He's already predicting victory. here's Hulk Hogan on why he wants to launch this professional wrestling league.
We're going to go to all the major venues. Our first one is August 30th in Cleveland. But the main thing is, like, because Eric's so darn important to this venture, he knows how to deliver, produce, and make the fans care about these athletes. Like, when Eric was explaining it to me, he goes, it's like The Voice. You shoot the backstory, you know. He broke his leg when he was younger. His family fell apart, or he got rewards, you know, for wrestling growing up. But once we find out what the backstory is, when these guys come through the tunnel, you already care about the athletes.
And I think that's so important to get the biography down. And UFC did a fantastic job on that. Eric, between what you've done personally, what you notice Dana White does, could you tell me how that's going to factor into this?
Not sure I understand the
As
question.
A producer, how are you going to sell this? Well, how you sold the WWE. And by the way, there's been highs and lows with professional wrestling, right? There's been, when I grew up, it was Bruno Sammartino and Ivan Koloff and all these guys. Then there was a low for a while. Then it became the, one of the top things, which you were very much involved with. Then it condensed into one league, and now maybe there's a couple. How do you take your whole career of producing, marketing, selling?
What's interesting about this, and I think one of the reasons why I jumped at this opportunity, is because of what I've learned in professional wrestling, which so much of it is marketing and sales and presenting the characters. It's the exact same thing that amateur wrestling needs. It's the same thing that this league needs. As Hulk said in that interview, you know, when you see the package that we produce for real and you hear his story and where he came from and the unique situation that he's grown up in because of amateur wrestling, you can't help but fall in love with this guy.
Real, what is your story? And is that your real name?
Real is my real name. That's right.
Where did it come from?
I grew up in Albuquerque, born and raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico, up until I was about 14 years old. I moved away from my family, moved in with a second family who, you know, I call them my white family. It's a funny joke we have around. But moved to Chicago, was coached under Coach Izzy Martinez. He's actually he's involved with RAF. And then had this dream of attending Stanford University, worked real hard at it, you know, got the grades, had the athletic achievement, and I was able to get in to Stanford. And it was my dream from day one when I moved from Albuquerque, New Mexico, away from my family.
So here's the interesting part, Brian. I got to slip this in. Yeah, I was talking to his dad. He was like three, 4, 5 years old, and he sees a Stanford jersey at a game of some sort and decided in that moment, I want to go. You know, 5 years old, whatever he was, he picked that jersey out. Dad got him the jersey. And from that point forward, according to your dad, he had his mind made up that he was going to go to Stanford.
Tough school, tough academic school. You have to. It's one of these students you have to go to class, right? Unlike what we're seeing now, especially in a sport like you got to earn your way through because for the most part, you didn't think you had a professional venue. So now, after 23, you graduate, 4-time champ, but you want to keep going.
Yeah.
And then you go for the national team. You make it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I make the national team. I'm now on the world team. I'm going to Croatia in September, and before that, I'm going to go ragdoll this guy Darian, and then you know. And then continue on, and you know whoever wants to come up next and challenge the world champ, we'll do it.
So the first one, this is how it's going to start, right?
Yep. Yeah, I want to hit on this. This is a beautiful thing about Real American Freestyle on a personal level. When I was a young wrestler, when I was 6 years old, growing up, wanting to be a wrestler, imagining being an Olympic champ, there wasn't the ability to dream about being a professional. It didn't exist, and now it's going to be able to exist. Now young wrestlers are going to be able to grow up and imagine, you know, I want to be a pro.
And here's the thing, real, I'll add something. A lot of times you don't hit your athletic peak at 22 and 23. A lot of times you're the strongest at 28, 30. For what do wrestlers do? Yeah, you go to the World Games and you can continue to train. A lot of them, you have to get other jobs too, right? Yeah. So does that, and maybe you say to yourself, you know, it's just not worth it. I'm going to have to move on in my life. And I noticed it too, you know, when people like first floor, soccer was the same way. You've done it soccer and lacrosse 2023, 22, 23. Now all of a sudden there are options. I want you to hear also this described by Lance Palmer. He was on Fox and Friends 2 with Real American Wrestling. He talked about what this competition is going to look like as it airs on Fox Nation August 30th, Cut 49.
What you'd see in the Olympics. And I mean, it's the best of the best. So it's. You know, I'm a former wrestler, current MMA fighter, and we have a few other MMA fighters on the card who are former wrestlers. But everybody else, like Real, I mean, they're current world team members and Olympic team members. So it's the highest level of freestyle wrestling you can get.
Right. So let's tell me about some of these matchups. First off, Bo Nickel against Jacob Cardenas.
Cardenas, yeah.
Cardenas.
Yeah.
What weight are we looking at?
What weight is that? I'm not even sure.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not sure what weight.
You know what? But
That's an American versus an American?
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
All right, we have Yanni
Diakamalis
against Bajrang Punya.
Yep.
And
American versus India.
India.
That's right.
And do you know these guys?
I do.
They have an international reputation?
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Then we have
These are the best wrestlers in the world.
Darian Caldwell against Real Woods. Are they going on by weight?
Are they
going
to go
heavier? Okay,
yeah.
Even though they could be bigger stars. Austin Gomez against Lance Palmer. Kennedy Blades against Alejandro Rivera. Mm-hmm. Sarah Hildebrandt, who you were just mentioning, against Zaitsin Hernandez. Did I get that right?
Close enough, right?
All right. Another match expected to be announced soon. It's all going to come up on August 30th. You're still working on maybe an October date for the next one. And
yeah.
What you want is to do, you want to do how many events between 25 and 26, Eric?
We'd like to scale up to doing one event a month is what we're working towards.
And production-wise, that's going to be a lot of pressure on you.
You know what? But once you figure it out, I mean, this first one is like you're inventing.
Cleveland.
The Cleveland, you know, we're inventing everything from the ground up. And a lot of the team, the production team, I've worked with before in WWE and in other organizations. So we've got a good team. But I think once we get this first one figured out, the next couple will be a lot easier when it comes to production.
It's going to be at the Wallstein Center on August 30th. Can you get tickets to that?
Ticketmaster
right now.
Yep.
How big is the arena, roughly?
I think it's 13,000 seats.
Can you sell it out?
We're going to try hard.
Right. The one person who I think would really love this, who I think is waiting an invitation, I think if you saw the president's face for the NCAA finals, he seems to have loved it. He sat there with Senator Dave McCormick. Your thoughts about the president coming down?
We would love to have
him. That community seems to really embrace him.
We would love to have him. I know Hulk has talked about talking to President Trump and seeing if he can get him there. So scheduling allowed.
Right.
We're very hopeful that he'd be there.
Did you have a chance to go to Pennsylvania? He was in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah.
For the finals. Were you there?
Yeah, I was.
What was that like?
I was there two times he was there, matter of fact. It was amazing. I mean, it was great. It was unbelievable to have the president there to watch you compete, do what you love.
Wow, that's just that. But also the community, it reminded me of a UFC fight a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
You got to create that atmosphere.
Yeah.
So I imagine it's going to be hard-driving music, too?
Hard-driving music. We got a country music song that we're going to introduce that's going to be our theme song. But, yeah, it's going to be a party.
All right, so it's going to be August 30th. We're going to hear a lot more about this. Real Woods is in studio now. We'll get other wrestlers in. Eric Bischoff, WWE Hall of Famer. And Eric, before we go, how do you feel about where the professional wrestling is, your old gig? How do you think, what's the state of the game now?
It amazes me. The business of the professional wrestling, sports entertainment, we'll call it that. But the business of sports entertainment / professional wrestling, it's mind-boggling to me how much it's grown.
Wow.
The international component in particular. It's just mind-boggling.
Real Woods, Eric Bischoff, we're excited. We're going to have you on a lot. Fox Nation's going to be broadcasting August 30th. Get your tickets in Cleveland, Ohio. Go to Ticketmaster, Real American Wrestling, Real American Freestyle. A new professional wrestling league is here. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Brian.
Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
I think that was proved that there is no military option to destroy our nuclear program. Yes, facilities have been destroyed. They are severely destroyed. But the technology is there. Our nuclear program, our enrichment program, is not something imported from outside that can be destroyed by bombings. It is developed by ourselves. It is an achievement by ourselves. The technology is there. The scientists are there.
That is the foreign minister. That was the foreign minister announcing with Bret Baier that he's not giving up his nuclear program and that it's going to continue to enrich. And he's not going to talk to us direct. I don't know what they understand. If I could just use Donald Trump's term, you don't have the cards. What they have to do is try to tell the Security Council that there's not going to be snapback sanctions that was there were going to be in place if they didn't sign the deal under Barack Obama. Now they're meeting with European leaders who are siding with us. They're also trying to win over. They call it the EU3, and they're trying to win them over. France, England, and Germany, at the same time trying to win. I'm sure they got the votes of China and Russia, but if the majority says no, the sanctions go back. Very good interview. It's worth looking at on foxnews.com. Go to briankilmeade.com. I want to see you in beautiful Dallas, Texas on the 23rd of August. Brian Kilmeade Show. It'll be history, liberty, and laughs. And that go to briankilmeade.com. VIP opportunities remain. Also, don't forget September 27th in Richmond, Virginia, all with Fox Nation.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.